the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to the podcast. This podcast is the first of a two-part series that was recorded back in July. Since recording, Atuksha has become a number one best-selling author for two separate books. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in the podcast. Because the podcast went on for an hour and a half, I made the decision to split the podcast into two easily bite-sizable, manageable chunks. And I hope you enjoy them and download both of them. Enjoy. Hi, and welcome to the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast. And in this interview series, today I have a lady by the name of Atuksha Kumwasi. And Atuksha is just an amazing individual. Her and her husband are just doing so many things, incredibly successful people. And I just wanted to look under the bonnet a little bit more to find out what makes them tick and find out what their inspirations are, what their motivations are, and just try and pick up some strategies that they're implementing that would account for their success. And their success begins with writing books. Also includes property, and it's moved through onto business. And one of those businesses that we're going to talk about is crowdfunding as well. So hi, Atuksha. Thank you very much for attending the podcast.
Hi, Dan. Today. You're very welcome. How are you?
Yeah, fabulous. Thank you very much. Good. So there's yourself and Davin, and you're married.
Yeah, so the way we do it is we have our own hobbies and we do our own things as well. So we're not in each other's pockets all the time.
You know, for me, one of the most powerful resources I have is my wife. They always say, don't they, behind every powerful man is an even more powerful wife.
Yeah.
And I think when you've got that support in a relationship, I think that just counts for millions, really, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It gives you the opportunity to sort of bounce ideas off. You're both working towards the same thing. And it just makes it so much easier than trying to do it alone. I know there's tons of support and resources out there, but you know, you're working with someone who's actually aligned to achieving what you want to achieve as well, and that's the difference, I think.
And I think sometimes you wake up and you don't feel as confident as maybe you did a couple of days before, or last week, or last month, but they do. And so when you have those down moments, and everybody has down moments regardless of who you are, even Tony Robbins has down moments, you know. But his support network is in place, his partner, his children, and having that support network is really important. And for people going through maybe hardship or difficulty, or maybe even they're not getting the results that they were hoping for, if you can rely on a support network to get you through those times when it feels a little bit darker than it should, then I think you're in a really powerful position. Because when you ultimately get out of those darker times, and we all go through them, when you move into the lighter times and when things are actually going right, you still got that as a support to carry it even further. Would you agree with that, do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, they do say you're surrounded, it's your environment, isn't it, that will affect you the most. And so if you have that support structure at home, it really, really helps, doesn't it? Because you can't constantly be out, you can't constantly be seeing other people. Yeah. You spend a lot of time at home, and so if you have people at home who are very supportive, who understand what you're trying to do and encourage you to do it, it really helps.
Yeah, I would agree. And for some people, they haven't got that support network. So to plug that gap, it's like your, and I'm sure you've heard this as well, but your network is your net worth.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've heard that. But the people that you talk the most to, are they... The question would be, are they fully supporting in who you are and what you do? Or actually, do you have friends who say, oh, well, that won't work? Or, well, my friend did that and it didn't work. Because if they are your support network, then whatever you're doing, it's not going to work because you haven't got a support network to support you. Whereas if your best buddy says, you know, chocolate inflatable penguins, great idea, go for it, go for it. Which is a crazy idea, of course. I mean, obviously, you need people to keep you on a straight and narrow to make sure that it's not such a crazy idea. But it's this balance, isn't it, between people who are negative about you just generally and people who will back you up and support you and help carry you through those down moments to those more positive moments.
Yeah, it's the gut. It's what comes out first, isn't it? So if your immediate reaction is, you're absolutely crazy, why are you trying to do that? That's a very different response to, even if it is a harebrained crazy idea, If the initial response from someone is, wow, that sounds very interesting, tell me more, and you have a conversation about it, and then they say, maybe not so, but these are the reasons for it, your whole outlook on it is really different. But if someone's immediate reaction is, that's never going to work, and why are you trying that, and why don't you get a regular job, or why don't you do this, or whatever, and the negative about it, that's where you start sort of losing your ambition to do stuff, I think.
I think you're right, and I think sometimes it's beaten out of you. The number of times that I've said when I first started in property, and I got my first property when I was 26, and it took me 6 years to get my first property because I started running the numbers when I was aged 20. And I distinctly remember my mum at the time, and I was 26, and my mum was my network, if you like, you know, my family.
Yeah.
And I remember my mum saying, when I finally took the plunge to buy a property, and then I saw the first property, and I've still got it, by the way. We've got a viewing on it tomorrow, as it happens. It's a HMO property these days. But I remember my mum saying, oh, you've rushed into it. And I was like, it's taken me 6 years to get to the decision point, you know, and I can't waste time now. But for other people looking on the outside, looking in, maybe it did look like it was a rush decision. But for me, I'd run the numbers a million times. I spoke to so many people about what it was that I was trying to do. And it wasn't a rush decision at all. But sometimes when you discuss your ideas with people outside, they don't see the whole picture. But when you have someone like Davin to be able to speak to, and he'll give you feedback and you give him feedback, and you're asking yourselves these questions, well, explain to me how this will work, and what about this, and what about that? I think that's a really powerful resource that you have available to you.
Absolutely. I'll tell you a funny story about when we bought our house. So we saved up, rather than buying a small flat and then moving up to a small house and whatever else, we just saved up, rented a place until we could afford to buy something we wanted. But we just went ahead and bought it. We didn't tell our family or anything like that. And when people came round, they were absolutely horrified because it was in such a state. There was so much that needed to be done to it. We couldn't see the end of the garden because it was so overgrown. And everything inside the house needed redoing. It had, you know, you get that paper where if you look long enough, you see a picture in it.
Yeah.
It had that in yellow on the walls, and the carpet was orange. But we could actually see the opportunity with the property. And now when people see it, they're just absolutely amazed by it. But it's quite funny, isn't it? It would have been quite off-putting if we'd taken lots of people around and everyone had said no.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting as well. And, you know, I think it was Robert Kiyosaki who said this. It may have been Chris Howard, actually. And he said, you know, when Donald Trump walks down the street, he doesn't see what you and I see. He sees towers and office blocks, and other people cannot see what you can see. And so what happens is that we sometimes tend to listen to other people on this bizarre idea that they may know better than we do. And so we end up not doing something, even though the thing would have worked, because of that other person's perception and comments. And I recall my success has come from not listening to other people, believe it or not, and stop following what other people have done, and for me just to go out and do my own thing. And I got a tremendous amount of success from the age of 26 to 30. I retired from work. I bought a beautiful Porsche. I went backpacking for a month. You know, I was financially free. This is before children came along, obviously. You may be financially free and then you have a couple of kids and then just to get it, you know, you need to go get another job. Well, as it happened, I set up my lettings agency and everyone said, well, have you ran one before? You've never worked in one. And I hadn't, you know, and they all thought it was crazy. And maybe I was, but that's what I wanted to go do. And so I just went and did it without any sort of fear or even knowledge. I just went and did it and it worked. And sometimes I think too much knowledge can prevent you from just going out and taking the action that's going to go out and get you those results.
Yeah, I agree. But also you probably felt your gut was right. If you go with your gut feeling, that's actually how you feel, isn't it? And so you then work at it because it feels right for you. And so then you're likely to be more successful anyway.
Yeah, I would agree. They do say that the gut feel is a bridge between the unconscious mind and the conscious mind. So when you get a gut feeling about someone, let's say, it's because your unconscious mind has picked up something about them that it doesn't like, and it's trying to translate it to you consciously. But sometimes it can't do that because it hasn't got the language to be able to speak unconsciously to the conscious in that perspective. And so this is where you get a gut feel from. And we all have those where we've met people and you're like, oh, there's just something I'm not quite sure about that person. And it turns out 6 months later you were spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I always go on gut feel.
Mm, really interesting. So how did you first start out? So you do CRM, which is customer relationship management. So basically that's databases, okay? And so, sorry, did I just like... Did I take a Ferrari and turn it into a Robin Reliant there? Sorry. It's just easy. It's just databases. That's all you need to know about that. So, but you're a consultant for CRM. So what is it that you help businesses do?
I go into businesses. So if you have businesses who are struggling to either keep their customers or they're not generating, they don't have good relationships with them, or they have products which they can cross-sell and upsell, but they're not doing any of that, I can help them with that. The reason I do that is because my goal is to align what the business is trying to achieve in terms of its sales target, growth projections, everything like that, but align it to customers and prospects. Now, the easiest way to describe it is, if you try to acquire new customers, it's a longer sales cycle because you have to build credibility. There's a number of other things you have to do before someone will invest in a business, unless, you know, it's a widget of sort.
When you mean a widget, like you see it and you buy it, there's no sales cycle in place.
Exactly that. So you're buying, or the business is selling product.
A commoditized product.
Right. But products, you know, tend to be price sensitive. And so it's trying to move away from that. Now, if, for example, you have 100 customers and they love what you do and they all recommend just one person who buys, you've doubled your business.
Yeah.
Right? And customer churn, if you take mobile telecoms, for example, their churn rates are absolutely ridiculous. And they lose thousands and thousands of customers every single year because they don't service them properly. And actually, by closing that back door just a little bit, even reducing it by about 10%, will increase their revenue in the region of about 30%.
Yes.
And so it makes a lot of sense to keep your customers happy. And also, it just makes it a much nicer environment. If you have customers who are constantly phoning up because the service isn't great, because your processes don't work correctly, your staff are going to be miserable as well because they're constantly dealing with complaints.
Of course. I mean,
if you're servicing customers who love what you do, it's such a different relationship, isn't it?
It is. Any large telecommunications company that happens to be listening, we're talking about you guys right now. And British Gas and Empower and all the others as well. Because they're just their customer service is terrible. I remember being on hold with the HMRC. I suppose, on one hand, I feel I should say nice things about them. But I'm not going to. So, and I was on hold to them for like 45 minutes. And I eventually got through and I said to the guy that answered, I said, are you guys even bothered about helping small businesses make more money? And he said, yeah, of course we are. I said, well, why don't you try and answer your phones then? Because if I'm on hold for 45 minutes, how many other small businesses are on hold for 45 minutes? And that's lost revenue.
Yeah, exactly that.
Just that alone would take us out of recession. Just HMRC picking up the phone and answering the calls would take us out of recession.
Yeah, they're getting a lot better, in all honesty. I know they went through a really bad patch, and their automation's getting better, because what happens is the more automation you have, the less personal it becomes, and relationships, customer relationships, staff relationships, all of that really does need to be personal as well. I don't think you can exclude that element. And so it's just finding that balance. You know, you have the corner shop. The corner shop knows exactly what you're buying, knows your name, all of that stuff. you can actually do that with thousands and thousands of customers electronically, but by implementing the correct journey and having the correct touch points. And by touch points, I mean, you know, a customer services call or an email explaining a new product, or
even just a postcard, prove a thing to say, you know, you inquired about this 2 months ago. Do you still need it?
Yeah, absolutely.
I got a book from a guy, and you had to watch these 4 videos. And if you watch these 4 videos, you got a free T-shirt. Well, I wanted a free T-shirt, so I watched all 4 videos, which was, you know, it was bribery. But I was quite happy to sit through all 4 videos. The content was useful, but I wanted the T-shirt. And for this guy, this was fabulous, because now each video lasted 15 minutes or so. So he now had me thinking about him for a period of an hour in total. Mm. And then a couple of weeks later, I got the T-shirt through the post, which I wore, because I'm a bit geeky like that sometimes. And that was really powerful for me. So now I'm much more likely to buy from this guy, because not only have I watched all 4 videos, which is what he wanted, he was also kind enough to send me a free T-shirt, because it was a geeky T-shirt, and I quite like that. And when we talk about... I'll give you another example. One of my coaching clients was a business client, and he does landscaping services for large supermarkets. And he only needs 1 or 2 extra customers a year to make a lot of money, because the customers are huge. And so we came up with ideas like, you know, when it's snowing and they send the gritters out?
Yeah.
Well, large supermarkets employ local contractors to come and grit the car parks. So the idea was that when it starts to snow, he actually sends out, he'll buy it from Amazon, but he'll get a little digger toy, like a children's toy.
Right.
And he'll send it to the owner of the supermarket. And it says something like, you can use this to clean your car park, or if it's not big enough, call me and we'll send a bigger one.
Yeah, it's making...
How cool is that in terms of CRM? Wonderful idea.
Yeah, the whole thing is about relevance, isn't it?
It is.
And so if you communicate with people with the messages that you know they're going to be interested in, then they're more likely to come. So another example is, I used to do some work for a company that had a very large events arm, and their largest event... you know, was thousands of people. And just by looking at the information about the people they were targeting, by analysing it and making the communications more relevant, we were able to uplift the revenue just on one event by $300,000.
Wow, that's an amazing result.
So it's possible to do, and a lot of businesses have so much information they collect about their customers and prospects. They don't even know it in terms of if you take an email campaign, the clicks in terms of the links on in the emails themselves, you know, what pages people view on a website, all of that stuff. I know there's Google Analytics for website stuff, but it's tying it all together through every channel. And all of that information tells you a lot about your customers and prospects. You'll know when they're dropping off if they're prospects, and so you can deal with that. Customers, you'll know if they're interested in other products but don't purchase, and then you send out messages accordingly.
Of course, actually, basket abandonment on carts is really powerful, because they put it in a basket and then something stops them from buying.
Yeah.
So if you know, that should, for me, trigger a phone call to the client and go, Bob, you looked at this, what was it that made you not buy it? You know, that's really important. And the other side of it that I just wanted to point out as well, you know, the people who click a link on an email that you send out, you know, if you're sending out 100 or 1,000 emails, let's say, and 100 people click that link, that's a segment that you should then follow up, either with a phone call, a postcard, another email, because that's a list that potentially is interested in buying that product. And if it's not followed up, then you're not going to make any sales on it.
Yeah, exactly. But one of the other interesting stats I came across not too long ago was, if someone engages with you now and inquires about your product or service and they don't buy, the chances are that they will buy within the next 2 years if you keep regular communication with them.
Yeah. How powerful is that?
I know.
Absolutely. So there's another one that you can do. Some CRM software will do this, as long as they're already on your list as an email address. So what you can set up is that when someone goes onto a particular web page, let's say you've got a special offer on a particular product, if that person goes onto that web page, you can get the software to trigger an action based on them landing on that page.
Yeah.
And the action could be to print off a postcard and send it, to send them an email, or to send an email to a salesperson to say, just phone this person up because they've just landed on this and they've been looking in the last 10 minutes. How timely is that?
Exactly. You can set up automated campaigns across the board. You can do that for emails, text messages, postcards, so direct mail, social media as well. So
yeah,
there are so many different channels and there's so much information and technology available to you. It's getting your business in order so that you know you're communicating with the customers properly. There's so much CRM kit out there, it's unreal, and a lot of it is very good, but you know, every one is going to be fantastic in one area and not so great in another. So
yeah,
my view is you start with what your business needs and work that piece of it out first. And as soon as you've done that, then you go and find the technology. If you buy the technology first and then try and fit your business around it, in my mind, it's like putting a square peg in a round hole and it doesn't work.
And what stops people actually implementing, you know, some of the things that we've talked about are a little bit technical, I suppose, but I think they're very sexy in terms of what you can do when, you know, someone landing on a particular page, I mean, it automatically prints a postcard and off it goes. I think that's phenomenal.
Yeah.
What stops a business actually implementing that, do you think?
It's a number of things. One is not knowing how to do it, not knowing where to start. In general, as soon as you say CRM, people get a bit scared because it covers so much. Also, the technology aspects of it. There's so much out there. Which one do you use? Which one do you select? Why do you select it? How do we get the whole business involved? That type of thing. There are so many barriers. And it's also, if you're starting from one place and you have a goal, which is the absolute ultimate communication plan, it's trying to figure out the gap and how you get there. And that's one of the things that people really struggle with. And then obviously it's things like lack of resources in terms of individual time or money. But you can get around all of those things. You know, if people are short of time and money, you just have your plan and you work on the low-hanging fruit and get that in place first. That will show an uplift anyway.
You know, Atuksha, the number of people I speak to who haven't got an email pop-up on their website, and they just don't collect email addresses. I mean, we're collecting between 10 and 20 email addresses every single day on my website, which is phenomenal, I think. And we do that through a series of SEO, which we don't really... When I had the lettings agency, it was all SEO, but this is going back 5 years. But these days, it's paid traffic and social media paid traffic, you know, either Google pay-per-click or it's Facebook or Twitter pay-per-click. And it drives to a specific squeeze page. We get their email address. They then go into a... They get five emails that are set up one after another each day. It tells a story, explains who I am and what people get and so on. People listening to this podcast, they're likely to be on that mailing list. They'll know exactly what I'm talking about. And that for me is like the most basic thing that you need.
Yeah.
So many companies are amazed that that even exists.
That's just it. You don't know what you don't know.
No. But and you don't know to look for what you don't know because you don't know... You don't know it.
Exactly. So, but I think it's becoming a bit more mainstream. People are realising the value of information and data. And because of technology, there's so much information around. It's a slow burn. There are businesses that have been doing it for decades. And it used to be a large business thing. But you know, small businesses can embrace it. There are tools out there for small businesses as well as the super large ones. And in my mind is the interesting part for me is actually working with small businesses, because the way I see it, if you build a small business on the right foundations, not only will you keep your customers by reducing your churn rate, so when people leave, you also focus on acquisition, so your business will grow twice as fast.
Yep.
And it will be on solid foundations because you have the processes in place. You know what, you know, everyone can share information. You're not repeating stuff. You don't have five spreadsheets with the same information on it.
Yeah.
You're consistent, and that's what it's about.
And what sort of size of business do you normally work with through your consulting arm?
I've worked with sort of multi-billion dollar companies, global, but I also work with small companies that have got sort of two or three people. I work with charities. I'm doing work with Limcare at the moment.
Yeah.
And I'm focusing more on property because I have a massive property interest. I love that space and I love CRM. And I know the opportunity is massive in that space.
I've got it. Okay. We're going to talk about property fairly soon. But just before we talk about property, you've written a couple of books now. The first book you've written is specifically about CRM, and I know this because I was interviewed for that book, and thank you for interviewing me. Obviously, I was number one on your list. I thought.
You were, funny enough.
Thank you very much. And I quite enjoyed that interview because I got to talk about my business and how we deal with customers in terms of what is a customer. And I do remember something that you said that sort of stood out in that my interview was different because it seemed to be more customer centric. Because for me, it's always about value, bottom line, that's it. And whereas I do know other businesses and it's always about the bottom line, that's it. As in how much money can they make? Whereas in this series of interviews we've done, people like yourself, everyone I've spoken to, they're not interested in the bottom line financially. They're interested in how they can help either people or how can they can change society to make it better. And I think that's what CRM can do, matching up the right product for the right people, as long as it's done properly and ethically and all the rest of it. So just tell me a little bit more about the book that you've created and the content that's in that first book and what it's called.
So the book itself is called Cave to Castle, and it's about how to transform any property business using customer relationship management.
Okay.
So what I've done in there is we're trying to explain the core principles of CRM at a basic level, and it's sort of explaining the importance of data, why even bother with CRM, the steps you can take to start putting a plan together, and just seeing where the low-hanging fruit is and seeing what you can work on. It's also got a series of interviews, and because we're focusing on property, aside from you, I also have interviews with Kevin Green, Simon Zucci, John Lee and Vincent Wong, Jaswant and Sylvia Rai, Shah Wasmand, and a number of other people. And they're all sharing their views in terms of customers, the importance of customers and prospects and CRM and the relationships they have. And they're all very different, Dan, because, you know, one person talks about the importance of customers, another one sort of focuses more on the systems part and why it's so critical for their business. Another one talks about the importance of social media and the impact it has. They're all very different, but they're just absolutely enlightening. And it's been an absolute privilege to spend time with these people and actually get insight from them. And I've learned a lot from a property standpoint just from doing the interviews.
Yeah. And when's the book going to be released?
The book's being released next month.
That's in July 2015 we're in, aren't we? 2015 July.
Absolutely. So it's currently slated for the third week in July.
Got it. Third week in July. And then the next book is a book about crowdfunding. We'll talk about crowdfunding and that book after property, if that's okay. So that's something that's quite interesting to me because it's a brand new business, effectively, is crowdfunding.
Yeah.
Or actually, it's probably been around for quite some time. It's just got a fancy new name that's popular because of the internet, crowdfunding. But it has been around for quite some time, really. I think Lloyd's probably invented it when we created insurance with all the ships. Slightly different, but pretty much the same.
Because I was looking at some research, and we'll come back to it, but in terms of crowdfunding and how long it's been going, the earliest crowdfund that people were aware of was something like 1890 or something.
Is that the sailing ships then, Lloyd?
Yeah, I think it might have been, actually.
So that was a guess from my point of view, but it seems to be on the nail there. For people that aren't aware, so what happened was people would go out in the sailing boats and then they wouldn't come back. And the man or woman, or usually it was a man in those days anyway, wasn't it? The man lost all his money. So someone thought, well, what if we all put 100 shekels or whatever currency they used in those days? What if we all put 100 shekels in, and then if someone loses the boat and there's, you know, 100 people putting 100 shekels, that's 10,000 shekels. It's only 3,000 shekels for the boat, so we're covered.
Yeah.
And that's basically where insurance came from, and Lloyd's was the first company to instigate that. And basically, that is like crowdfunding, isn't it? Let's talk about crowdfunding now, shall we?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're on there. So just you tell me what your perception of crowdfunding is and what the advantages are to both the lender and the borrower.
So crowdfunding, in a nutshell, is you get two parts to it. You have people who want to borrow funds for whatever reason. It could be that they're working on a property project, they are launching a new product or have an invention of sort, it's a social cause or something like that. They have something that they need to get funding for. And then the other part of the crowdfunding is investors, and it's actually money coming from individual people who group together to fund this property project or business idea. And it's as simple as that. So it's a lot of people investing smaller amounts, but grouping together to fund projects or business ideas.
And from a lender's point of view, so the person who's got 10 grand sat in an account, they want to get a return on that money. It can reduce the risk, because if you lend £10,000 to one person, you have 100% risk on that person. But if you lend 10,000 people a pound and two or three don't pay it back, or even 30 people don't pay it back, your risk is spread across the whole 10,000. And I've just had a coaching client, actually, in the last couple of days, who was on about lending out a large sum of money, and they called it crowdfunding. And they were on about lending it to one individual. I had to stop them and say, no, that's not crowdfunding. That's lending it to some bloke that you've met on the internet and you don't know who he is or anything. Why would you do that? Luckily,
it depends, because you look at it from I look at it from a project standpoint. Because if you've got one project and you have 5 or 10 or 20 or 1,000 investors, that's a crowd fund. Now, each of those investors could be putting in all of their savings into that deal.
Yeah.
But it's still a crowdfund, because I'm looking at it from the project or business idea, the property project or business idea. There's actually different types of crowdfunding available. There's four main types.
Okay.
The first is rewards-based. So what that means is if you invest in my idea, for that I will give to you a book, or I'll make you a salad, or I'll do this. You do something as a reward, okay?
Or even the product itself, for example?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, a lot has happened in terms of gaming. So people will put money towards the development of an online game if they then have access to that game, for example. The second one is equity. So you can actually invest in a business and take a share of that business.
Okay.
So that's fairly straightforward. The third one is loan-based, and that's known as peer-to-peer. So if you invest £10,000, that £10,000 will be held up for 12 months. But for you lending me the money, I will give you a 10% return for the year.
Now, how is the capital protected in a peer-to-peer loan?
It depends on the deal. So we're focusing on property predominantly, and we take a charge on the property, typically a first charge. And so if someone has a piece of land and they want to build, they may require funds for building costs, but we would then secure on the land. So we would take a first charge on that, because being a crowdfunding platform, we have to make sure that as best as we can, we protect investor funds.
Yeah.
We have to do that. And I just want to finish off the fourth type of crowdfunding is donation-based. So that's all your social stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So interestingly, I wouldn't say marketed, but we put on social media about a lady I know who has an autistic son and needs to raise some money because she can't take him to a play centre. He's 10, I think he is. He can't take him to a play centre because of his autism, loud noises and so on, makes him very nervous and very upset as well. So she's trying to raise money via the donation form of crowdfunding. And she needs 2,200. She's got about £1,200. I think you guys donated as well, actually. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
But it's wonderful to be able to just be able to do that. And you see someone who needs help, I suppose it's not technically a charity and they can't call themselves a charity, but it is donation related. And to be able to go and make that difference for somebody who just needs to raise £2,000, which is not a lot of money in the whole scheme of things.
Yeah, exactly. And what I absolutely love about crowdfunding is it's people power. People, if you believe in a cause or a project or an idea or an invention, you have the opportunity to be part of it and bring it to life. And there are so many things that would just never have got funding through traditional channels.
Yeah.
And they're coming to market, and it's made it such an interesting place to be because there's some fantastic stuff coming to market. And it's just wonderful. I absolutely love this space.
So from a business's point of view then, and the specific crowdfunding platforms designed for specific reasons. So, for example, if I've got a business and I needed to invest in new equipment, then I can set up a crowdfunding, what would you call it? Crowdfunding?
Platform.
Platform, okay. And then people can donate to that and get either one of those four types of rewards. So rewards based, equity in the business, it would be a loan or even sometimes a donation.
Yeah, it's not that straightforward because money's involved, especially for equity and loan based typically, because they tend to be higher amounts. It's a regulated activity in the UK. Well, it's a regulated activity everywhere. In the UK, the FCA regulates it. And there aren't that many companies who have peer-to-peer licenses in the UK at the moment. Yeah. And it's still fairly new, but you have to make sure that you adhere to the FCA regulations and you have the correct permissions to do that. So not everybody can just go on and sort of set up an equity or loan-based crowdfund.
Yes, I've got it. And so the one that you guys have set up now, you mentioned that it was specifically for property. So just talk to me a little bit more about that and if people wanted to get involved or find out more information about how that would happen.
Yeah, so we are focusing on property. We have a deal already on the site. We're exploring more deals. And what typically, so let me talk you through the journey. If there's a property person who is interested in borrowing funds from us, the first thing we would do is basically ask them to register their interest, and then we'll have a conversation with them. Then we'll ask them for a lot more information about the deal itself, because we have to make sure the numbers stack at the end of the day before we release any funds. Once we go through that, we do quite a lot of due diligence. If it's a business, we'll look at how the business is performing, what the projections are, when the money is going to be returned, what the backup plan is. All of that stuff has to be evaluated by us, and that's something that we'll take on. We then actually send it out to other people as a final check as well, and you know, contracts and everything are put in place at that point before we would even present the deal for funding to our investors.
Yeah.
Then what happens is investors will look at the deal, and if it's something that is of interest to them, at that point they then just make a pledge and say, you know what, I'm happy to put in 10% or 25% or 10,000 or whatever that amount is. Mm-hmm. And it's only when we have the full amount will we then take the funds and take a charge on the property on behalf of the investors. And then, you know, once the project is complete, again, the funds come to us and we distribute them back to the investors.
So it's almost like an escrow account, more or less.
Yeah, we have to make sure that everything's done correctly, and there are fairly strict regulations in terms of how we operate. But the first time someone wants to borrow or invest, because we have to do AML checks and all sorts of things on our investors as well, but once that's done, then actually it becomes a little bit easier for future deals.
What's an AML check?
It's anti-money laundering.
Yeah.
But there's a number of other checks that we need to do as well on the investor side as well. So on both, before we'll even consider borrowers or investors, we have to do our due diligence. And we're very, very strict about that to make sure that both our borrowers and our investors are protected.
Okay, and what sort of return would somebody who's an investor be looking to achieve, do you think?
It depends upon the deal. I've seen property deals which were offering 6% return, but they take forever to fund because being in property, you know, you can typically get more than that.
Yeah.
I also know other investors who are getting much, much more, you know, borrowers being charged 20%+ for funding. And so it absolutely depends upon the project. And in some regard, the length of time involved that the funds are going to be tied up and things like that. So it's very difficult to say at the moment because it's so deal specific.
Okay. And you have a book specifically on crowdfunding, and I know this because I've seen the front cover. When is that book going to be released?
That's coming out in the third week of July as well. We're doing both
Excellent.
Together.
Yeah, why not? Why, you know, just do one at a time, like most people do? Why not just do, like, two at a time? I'm surprised you've not done three or four.
It's only because if your head's in that space for writing a book,
yeah,
then you might as well do the other one at the same time.
Yeah, you might as well.
So... And plus, it's because we're working on these businesses together, actually, they're in the front of our mind. And so to actually then write about them is okay.
And so the book's out in the third week of July as well. What's that book going to be called?
That book is called Simple Crowdfunding, and it's Learn the Secrets to Crowdfunding Success.
And so for people who want more information, either because they want to invest or maybe because they want to borrow from the fund as well, potentially, is that where they can find that information from?
They'll be able to find the information from there. But if anyone is looking to invest or borrow or just find out more about crowdfunding, because we have a lot of information that we can sort of talk to people about, then just ask them to get in touch either through email at So it's info@simplebacking.co.uk or through our website, which is simplebacking.co.uk.
That's a great domain name, by the way, simplebacking.co.uk. It says exactly what it does on the tin.
Exactly that. We want to keep it simple, and that's our whole philosophy about this. It's making it easier for people to access this alternative finance.
Fabulous. Now, you guys don't believe in doing just one or two things at a time, do you, really? So let's just talk.
So that was the end of part one. Please go ahead and listen to part two.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.